Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining in downtown Mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Now here is your host, MC Blair.
Hey, good morning. Good morning to all of you out there. This is MC Blair, and this is To Your Health on WPVC, the progressive voice, the voice of resistance, right here in Charlottesville. And we're really excited this morning. We have a representative from City Schoolyard Gardens, Richard Morris, here. How are you, Richard?
I'm fine, and thank you for the invitation.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. You know, you guys are doing such good work over there. It's absolutely amazing. And I did have Jeanette on, along with, Eileen.
Yes.
And, so that was so much fun. And, you know, you guys are just doing great work over there. I've always said that, you know, any time you can get the kids working and get the kids, you know, eating real food.
Right,
know,
right.
Most of them have never, you know, experience that.
Right. Yes.
And then you see them working together and getting along. It's like, that's it. There it is. That's the answer. So, so tell us a little about yourself and about what you do over there.
Okay. So, I've been with CSG, mm-hmm. City Schoolyard Garden, for this is my fifth month in the job.
Okay.
So
I'm
finding my way. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a little bit, I have a little bit more of an idea of where I'm going.
Right.
I wear three different hats at CSG. One is as a program outreach coordinator. That's my official title. Mm-hmm. I do some work in the schools with a couple of our garden coordinators at Buford Middle School and at Charlottesville High School. And I'm also the liaison with UACC, Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville. And I also do some work with the Charlottesville Food Justice Network. This work in food has been a long journey for me. I started out as a kid in Arizona, grew up. My mom always had a garden in the backyard. And even though we were out in the desert, she had the greenest of green thumbs. And we always produced more food than my family consumed. I had two brothers, two sisters. Mm-hmm. And so our neighbors knew that they could come to our house. If someone was running short on food, they could come to our house and go to our garden and pick food out of the garden. And my mother just gave it away. And I've always gardened my entire life. Mm. But like a lot of Americans, I fell into the standard American diet. And I got to a point where I was up to 400 plus pounds.
Oh, my.
Yes. And I had everything that goes along with that. I was pre-diabetic. I had joint problems, high blood pressure, just everything. And I felt like, you know, this is the end. And unfortunately, that sort of diet-related issues are very common for people like me and people who fall into, you know, eating a lot of processed food. And so in around 2002, 2003, I had a revelation one day. I was working in New York, and I had this idea that I need to start eating the way my grandparents used to eat, just whole foods. And so I called my wife, who was back home in Virginia. And I said, you know, we need to eat the way our grandparents ate. We need to go through the cupboards and the refrigerator and get rid of all of the stuff that you can't create in the kitchen that would require a lab to create, all of the foods that have ingredients that we can't pronounce. And
gotcha.
So we very quickly started doing that. And over the course of 18 months, I lost my first about 160 pounds.
Wow.
Doing nothing more than just changing what I was eating.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been on this long journey to where I am now, where I am working in the City Schoolyard Gardens, which are 8 gardens in Charlottesville public schools.
Oh, right. I know all the elementary schools and Buford Middle and then Charlottesville High School, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's awesome. That's really, really great. And, you know, your story reminds me a little about mine as far as not knowing, you know, what was good to eat. And it just, you know, typical diet. And we'd started to eat organic, and that was good.
Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, we were going out to eat three or four times.
Yeah.
You know that. You know what that is. You know that it tastes great. That means it's a lot of fat and a lot of sugar and a lot of salt, and so we weren't getting the right nutrition until we came up here.
Uh-huh.
And actually, a friend of mine that I had known in Norfolk, she came up here with her husband to start Hamilton's at first in Maine,
yes.
and along with Bill Hamilton, of course. And so she was the opening executive chef, and she told me, she said, I've got something to tell you about food. I got to share this with you. But if I warn you, if you do this, you won't be able to go back because your body will reject it.
Ah.
And she was right. And it was this whole food, real food, you know, local, organic, or at least organically grown,
uh-huh.
you know. And, of course, there's lots of other names for it now, biodynamic and sustainable and regenerative agriculture, I think, is the most comprehensive term to this. Right,
right, right. Yeah. Right.
And so what you guys, I guess, you know, going through your website. Oh, by the way, folks, you want to see a really cool website, go to City Schoolyard Gardens website, and there's videos there and just all sorts of blogs and just really cool information about why it's so important to get these kids learning, right? And so what do you see the change, I would say, that when they come in at first, is kind of take us through that a little bit. When they first come in and you notice, you know, the change in the kids.
Well, I can tell you about a conversation that I had with one of the garden coordinators,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's indicative of the kinds of changes that you're talking about. So, and I've seen this myself when I've been in the gardens at Beaufort Middle School. So there was a class of students who were in the garden, and this was their first time in the garden. And as they were going through the assignment or going through some of the work in the garden, which includes a lot of hands-on experiential work, and so they're digging and they're weeding and so forth. And at some point, somebody saw a worm, and of course some of the kids just freaked out because, you know, that's not something people see on a regular basis if you're not out in the garden. And so while there was a little bit of fear there was also a lot of curiosity. And so what's cool about that is when these things happen in the garden, they create opportunities for conversation. It's a learning, one of those learning points in time where you can have a good conversation and learn something. And so over time, not only had the fear of worms and some of the other bugs that you see in the garden, not only had that dissipated, but kids were looking for bugs in the gardens because now they wanted to know, what's this? What's this? Is this one a pest? Is this one good for the plants? And so those are the kinds of shifts and changes that mm-hmm. I've seen when I'm out in the garden.
Right. So to discover all those invertebrates
yes.
squirming around in the soil, you know, to keep our soil clean. And yeah, that had to be amazing. Yeah, normally they're saying, ooh, gross, right?
So right,
they see
right.
A worm. What about, I noticed one of the things in the blog, they were talking about the kids eating kale chips. And some of them were you know, kind of turning their noses up at it, and there was a change there, wasn't it?
Yes. So we have a program at City Schoolyard Garden called Harvest of the Month.
Harvest of the Month, right.
And it's for pre-K through 12th grade. Mm-hmm. And basically what it boils down to is it's an opportunity to introduce students to foods that they might not necessarily have access to, or maybe they have access but they're not interested in eating
mm-hmm.
it. And so in the case of kale, just recently, our last Harvest of the Month vegetable was kale. And what they did was it was like crunchy kale. So they cooked it in an oven so that it was nice and crunchy and well-seasoned. It was kind of like potato chips. I don't
right.
know if you've had them before, but they're pretty delicious.
They are.
You know, once you start, it's hard to stop. But it's kale, so it's good food. And so one of the things I've learned is that typically, it takes about, I believe the number is 18 exposures to a new food for a student, for a child to shift their thinking about that food.
Huh.
And so one of the things we discovered in the last Harvest of the Month with the kale is that they loved it. And in some cases, in some of the schools where we were doing this, they couldn't get enough. And the staff was having a hard time keeping up with with enough kale for the snack that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something that takes place every month. There was another month when I participated at Beaufort Middle School, and we did watermelon. So we had chopped up watermelon, and we were set up in the cafeteria, and after everyone was done eating, they could come by our table and pick up a little sample of watermelon. And some of the watermelon we had was actually yellow, which I think is a variety called Moon and Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of these kids had never seen yellow watermelon before. And so they were like,
I haven't either.
What's that? And then they taste it and they realize, man, this is delicious.
Right,
and so once again, they were excited by it. People were coming back and asking for more. In a couple of cases, a couple of guys had a contest to see who could eat the most samples.
Oh my goodness!
And so the harvest of the harvest of the month program is just this really cool idea to introduce new foods,
mm-hmm.
and that creates, to me, that's like planting a seed. And so it creates this opportunity, and it creates a situation that down the road, like we know from the stories we hear back, that sometimes kids go home and they ask mom and dad, Can I have this vegetable, or can we grow this vegetable?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a great program.
Oh man, it sounds like it. So that's Harvest of the Month. What I noticed last month there was a farm to school, healthy schools, right?
Yes.
And so how did that go?
So Farm to School Week, it takes place. I believe it's the first week of October,
mm-hmm.
and it's an entire week of. Us inviting professionals, farmers, or people doing farm-related work into the schools, and the students in the schools getting an opportunity to come out and experience through some hands-on stuff and some show-and-tell type mm-hmm. type activities to see what that kind of farming is like. So, for example, we might have in one situation where someone who farms goats brings some goats out, and the kids get to pet the goats and get to feed the goats, and they get to learn about the different types of goats. I participated during the last Farm to School Week as I went to one of the grade schools and did a scarecrow building, scarecrow building
right,
exercise.
Sure.
And the kids just loved it. We actually built two scarecrows. I had one that I brought with me as sort of an example. And I wasn't sure if we were going to get a whole lot done, but they were just so excited. And it was very hands-on, and we got to talk about scarecrows and why, you know, we use scarecrows in the garden sometimes. We got to talk about crows, and it was a great experience.
Well, it sounds like it. Man. I noticed that... you know, the kids obviously have an opportunity to learn not only about what you're doing right there, what they're doing right there at that particular garden,
mm-hmm.
but also how that ties into Virginia's total agricultural community.
Mm-hmm.
And so have you noticed any, say, kids showing an interest in maybe farming down the road or any of that sort of thing?
So yes, I have. So mm-hmm. one of the, I'll tell you two things. Actually, I'll piggyback on what I just said.
Okay.
So, I was at one of the grade schools, and I was doing the scarecrow building exercise. And we had a lot of fun. It was actually starting to rain that day, but it didn't matter because everybody was having so much fun. And so that was that. So the other hat I mentioned earlier that I wear is the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, which is three urban gardens that we manage. So I'm out working in one of these urban gardens, and this group of girls who live in the neighborhood came through the garden, and one of them happened to be one of the girls who participated in the scarecrow building contest. So she's telling her friends, she points to me and says, "Farmer Richard, Farmer Richard." And she comes running over, and they were so excited to be in the garden. But we also, CSG also has a... summer internship program where this past summer we had six interns. These were students from Charlottesville High School. And they, in one case, worked with me in the Urban Agricultural Collective gardens. We had another of our interns working in the City of Promise Garden.
Mm-hmm.
All of these students have some interest in the garden. And we wound up, and this was a paid internship, by the way. So they were working in the garden, learning about food justice, and also getting the opportunity to engage in an activity that they were all interested in. So I have no doubt that as these youth grow up and head on down the road because they've been exposed to the garden and exposed to farming and have seen that as a viable potential career that some of them will engage in it as a career. Mm-hmm. Others, like I do at home, as it's just part of my lifestyle.
Sure, just have a home garden type
right.
of thing. And then that way, at least, you know, you're getting your fresh produce and,
yes.
and all that sort of thing that you know was grown correctly.
Yeah.
I guess I was trying to. There is a program out called Slow Money. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Okay, and so my friend Michael Riley is part of that. He was also at an app called Foodways where he would tell people about local restaurants that mm-hmm. were serving real food.
Right.
And so that sort of dovetailed into this Slow Money, which is a plan to, and they work with cities and states to free up money
mm-hmm.
to give young people a chance to open farms.
Ah.
And thus increasing our chance, not only here locally, but in Virginia, of food security.
Yes. Yes.
And of course, food security is, that would be ideal, you know, if we could get, you know, we'll never get completely cut off from the factory food system because
right.
it's too large.
Right.
But I think that if our diets could be, you know, 75% local,
mm-hmm.
I mean, childhood obesity drops like a stone, type 2 diabetes, and which you know a lot about.
Right, right.
All that doesn't go away, but it's lessened to the point where far less doctor visits and all that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
right?
So, yeah. I really like that you're connecting the dots between food and health and money.
Mm.
Food insecurity doesn't exist in a vacuum.
No, it doesn't.
It's connected to income. It's connected to education. It's connected to housing. It's connected to transportation. And so, for example, if someone has housing issues, if they're living in substandard housing, that's going to be at the top of their list of priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And in part because of that, that may drive some food decisions that may not be the best decisions. If someone, let's say there's a farm or some place where you can get whole produce, you know, good quality produce, but it's across town and you don't have a car.
Right.
And you've got two kids and you've got to take the bus to get there and it takes an hour and a half on the bus and you know, you've got to get your kids to school. All of these things are connected. And so if we really want to get to a point where that we have food security, we also have to think about housing security, transportation security, economic security. All of these things are connected. So it's this sort of integrative approach that we have to take.
That's exactly right. Folks, you're listening to Your Health on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We are going to take a short break, and we are talking to Richard Morris of City Schoolyard Gardens. And we will be back. And we are back. This is MC Blair. I'm talking with Richard Morris of City Schoolyard Gardens right here on To Your Health, airing each Saturday morning from 11 till 12 on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, 94.7. And you can go on our website, 947wpvc.org, easy for me to say, and you can stream our shows live, or you can see the podcasts and revisit them anytime you want. It's pretty cool. So, Richard, we were in the middle of talking about food security, job security, all that sort of thing, and if you could continue along that line, how, you know, money decisions have to be made. And of course, you just mentioned if you have to pay for housing, you might not have enough left in your budget to get real food.
Right, right. So sort of a starting point for this conversation
mm-hmm.
is there's a two-pronged approach that you can take to food security, and both of them are necessary. So one is the immediate needs approach. So an urban garden, for example, produces food that can feed people in the now, immediately, but that does not address the long-term problem mm-hmm. of food insecurity, because what happens if that urban garden goes away? And so what you also need along with that garden or a food kitchen where people can go to get food, you also need to be at the same time addressing the larger systemic issues
mm-hmm.
that created the conditions where someone needed to go to a soup kitchen or needed to go to an urban garden to get free food. So, and both of those things are connected. And so if we're attacking both the immediate needs and sort of the larger systemic problem to address the long-term needs, that's going to get us to a place where we're approaching food security. Now, food security is also connected to economic security. And so having an urban garden and having opportunities for people to actually have jobs, housing security, taking into consideration that people with adequate housing and who have access to good quality food are going to be more productive people. So
Right. You
can see production increase across industries. People are less likely to get sick.
I was just going to say less lost hours.
Yeah. That's you know, I've got a one of my statistics I like to throw out is that nearly 37%, this is for Charlottesville, nearly 37% of third and fifth graders are overweight or obese. And so there's a bunch of other issues that are associated with overweight and obesity. And if we're addressing food issues, if we're creating an environment where people have adequate housing, where they have access to good quality food, where they have a transportation system that takes people who don't have cars into consideration, if we have all of those things, then we're creating security. You don't have to put anything on the front end of that. We can think of it as you know, life security, quality of life security.
Wow. So sort of like food justice, huh?
Yes.
And, oh, by the way, folks, if you are looking for a place to spend your resources, either time or money or both, go to the City Schoolyard Gardens website and you can volunteer or donate. And of course, we encourage both anytime you want. And so also any of the 16 organizations within the Charlottesville Food Justice Network are also good places for your time and your resources. It's just a wonderful thing they're doing. And I want to mention one thing. I was reading and I saw one of your instructors. They asked her, what was her dream of the future? And she said a large farm, 5 to 8 or 10 acres to where it could, be jointly controlled by City Schoolyard Gardens and a, like you were mentioning, the intern program and and all that, to where we could, have food not only for the schools, and that's where she had left off, to where every salad bar was grown locally and, all the produce that was at the schools, offered at the schools, was local.
Right.
But also, and I see it as something down the road, and I have a little thing called 2-minute drill I mentioned, but where, the UVA has enough land, we could put up greenhouses, for the winter time so that local produce could be had in the winter time when the local farms were shut down.
Right.
And in the summertime, it could be run by a joint effort, City Schoolyard Gardens, UVA, with a really, really big time intern program and a summer camp almost. Mm-hmm. And to where during the summertime, they're learning how to use a greenhouse and what everything that goes into a big greenhouse, and also maintenance and all that sort of thing. And then, of course, the local farms would be supplying the produce during the summertime when they're in season.
Right.
So that it would, be aiding the community, not only the students, but the community at the same time. And I think that might get more students, interested in doing farms and that sort of thing. I don't know. Just an idea.
As a guy in my 50s, I garden and I farm garden and I love it. I wish that had been introduced to me as an option when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. It was never even brought up. There was this assumption, and for a long time this assumption has remained that farming is not a viable enterprise. And which is clearly not the case. We need more farmers, and specifically we need younger farmers. But even for the people who aren't interested in farming as a profession, farming as a component of your lifestyle, it's extremely optional, mm-hmm. it's extremely viable. And it's the thing I think that more people should be considering. Just to piggyback on one thing you said when you were talking about this vision of this sort of space, this garden farm where all of this amazing synergistic activity is taking place. Mm-hmm. One of the key components of a successful environment like that is land ownership.
Mm-hmm.
What you will see in a lot of urban gardens, not just here in Charlottesville, but across the country, is a lot of times because these operations are running on shoestring budgets, they're leasing or renting land. And the problem with that, especially in urban environments, is that land is valuable. And
yes.
So what can typically happen is at some point development comes along, and that garden that that farmer has been enriching and building that soil for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, now they've got to go someplace else. And so while renting land to do gardens is a good starting point, we also have to think about ownership. So I really like that idea, that vision that you outlined of having land that belongs to an entity, either an academic entity or a nonprofit or a group of nonprofits, or owned by residents who also understand the value of land ownership. Just you create a situation that's just like home ownership. You build equity. And in this case, you're building food equity by having land that you own, that you're producing food on, that you're introducing your children to. And so they're growing up with this same idea of the power of ownership and the power of food production.
Wow. Absolutely. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, To Your Health, Saturday morning, 11 till 12, right here. And we're talking with Richard Morris of City Schoolyard Gardens and getting some really cool stuff. You know, Richard, you mentioned owned by the community, and I flashed on the Green Bay Packers. And, what? Where did that come from, right? Well, the Green Bay Packers are owned by the citizens of Green Bay.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a, the stock. You buy stock
okay.
and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not a single owner.
Okay.
And so, that's enough of that. Let's talk about, like a lot of land.
Mm-hmm.
UVA got given a lot of land from the Kluge Institute. And, I guess it was her directly. It was about 5,000 acres. Somebody just bought about 1,700 of those 5,000 acres, and then that leaves, 3,300 acres. And I had been thinking that UVA could give a land use grant to, City Schoolyard Gardens, so that land could be used for that and make it a long time, 100 years or 200 mm-hmm. years or in perpetuity, mm-hmm. And then that way you wouldn't have to worry about owning the land. But by the same token, it could also be a community effort of somehow going out and, making that presentation to the various communities and giving this much, breaking it down. If everybody gave, $100 or whatever, I don't know what the breakdown would be.
Right.
That they would own a part of that. And then it wouldn't go to development because it would be for the whole community. And I'm just, I'm thinking of all kinds of, my mind's going a million miles a minute right now, just thinking, my goodness, where could that lead? If they have ownership, mm-hmm. now they got skin in the game, and all of a sudden they're saying, okay, kids, you're going off to the farm, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And learning, and then you're helping us, and the kids are proud of, what they're doing. I know you get that at City Schoolyard Gardens. Oh, that's what I want to ask. Do you have any examples of where maybe some kids came in to they were in school and, they're kind of, the looking down and kicking the dirt and, got a little attitude going on, right, and all this and for whatever reason. And all of a sudden you see some sort of a really positive change. Have you seen?
So I haven't seen this, but I know of this particular situation, and I've worked with this young man. Mm-hmm. he has been working in the CSG Gardens and working in the UACC Gardens. He's a high school student. And my understanding, this is something that was told to me, is that when he initially started in the gardens, he wasn't all that excited about it. I mean, think about it from the perspective of a teenage boy. So, you know, you're out there, it's hot, you're sweating, you're grubby, and, you know, it's not a whole lot of fun.
Right.
At least as far as how we define fun. But apparently, after a couple of years of coming out, and you know, he's a good kid, and so he was doing his work, but not having a whole lot of fun at it. And then a light went off, a light bulb went off, a switch was flipped, and suddenly he was all in. And I have worked with him in the UACC Gardens, and he's just amazing. He's inspiring. He gets out there. He's a big guy, strong guy. Mm-hmm. We have a walk-behind tractor that we use, and it's pretty heavy-duty piece of machinery. It's hard to move around, but he gets out there, and he manhandles that tractor and just goes at it 100% and is completely into, you know, gardening. I had a part-time position open this summer to assist the garden manager that we have in the UACC Gardens, and he wasn't available because he lives out of town right now, but I would have loved to have had him on board through the fall. So he's a good example of how, and I was the same way, frankly. You know, when I was growing up in Arizona, my mom had me out there in 95-degree heat weeding in an Arizona garden. I hated it. I couldn't understand why my mother was doing this to me. But I came to love it, and so did my brother. So these things happen. You know, humans, we're adaptable creatures. And we, after you've been out in the garden a bit, you get these intangible and tangible results from it. And you realize, especially if you're like I was, a young boy, teenage boy, you realize, hey, it makes you stronger.
Right.
And because you're stronger and you're more confident and you're eating good food, you know, you're more attractive to the high school girls. And you know,
there it is. That's
there it
goes.
Yeah. There it is. And so it's upside all the way. It's all benefits.
Yeah.
Win-win.
And, oh, man, and then, of course, they're healthier and, you know, they're eating right, their brains are healthier, and obviously they have a larger capacity to learn.
Yes.
And, you know, that's huge, and I think that's one of the, it's rather sad when I think about it on a national scale that all these processed foods and the more sugar, sugar's being added back into the school system. We had 8 years where it wasn't, and now it's being added back. And unfortunately, and of course, that makes for unhealthy brains, unhealthy bodies. You can't learn.
Right.
Your attention span is shot, you know, and so, you know, and you can go back historically, and it seems like the, you know, governments in history, especially more repressive ones, don't want their citizenry educated, because then they can pull the wool over their eyes without them knowing about it. And I think that that's, you know, kind of where we're headed, unfortunately. And so enough politics. Yeah, I heard a radio host say that this, or a TV host this weekend say, if don't talk politics at Thanksgiving. Don't do it, you know, on the way home maybe, but not, you know, they're dead. And he's right. He's totally right, you know, because you'll get people getting more together, like when they work in the garden, you know.
Right, right.
And, you know, and so they're not talking about the troubles of the world. They're talking about, hey, you know, we got to get this row done, and we got to get these seeds just right, and, you know, make sure the water's right. And so there's so many things to focus on when you're gardening.
Right.
And it takes your mind off of that. So that that's why I say community-based agriculture is probably the pill, if you will, that will cure, you know, political.
Right. I mean, one of the reasons that the UACC gardens were created in the first place, it wasn't just to feed people, but it was also to create a space where people of diverse backgrounds could come together, work toward a common goal. And that's, I mean, there are studies that show when you have people together and they're all suffering to some degree. You know, they're working toward a common goal, and there's some challenge and some stress there. It actually brings them closer together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the garden serves that purpose. But I also want to piggyback on what you were saying about, you know, Thanksgiving and politics and so forth. So yeah, you don't have to talk about politics at the Thanksgiving table. there are innumerable number of other subjects that you can talk about. But the thing about food is that we humans, we food is more than just something we put in our bodies to fuel our bodies. Food has a lot of social meaning. It has a lot of power in how we connect with each other. And so if you take whole foods and then you add that to cooking, home cooking, because from my perspective, cooking is a way to show love.
Yes.
It's a way to show compassion and care for others. I always tell people, you don't have to preach about good food. Just invite a friend, invite a coworker, invite someone over to dinner and cook one good meal for one good person and just have a bonding conversation. And all the things that drive you apart, leave that off the table.
There you
Talk
go.
About the things that pull you together. And so that Thanksgiving meal represents a powerful opportunity. If you've got good food at that meal and you've got good intentions behind the cooking and so forth, and you sit down across from each other, leave the things you fight about at the door and talk about the things that you love.
Mm-hmm.
That's power right
there. That's exactly right. Man, hey, you're listening to Your Health. I'm talking to Richard Moore, City Schoolyard Gardens. We're going to take another little break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with my aunt in California, who has been an activist in her assisted living place. She's 95, and they weren't feeding them fresh vegetables, the restaurant there. And so she has had a couple of years of activism and getting fresh vegetables to her peers. It's really, really cool what she's doing. So we'll be back and talking with her after the break. Had, unfortunately, hard time getting a hold of my aunt, and didn't seem to be any answer there. But, hey, we tried. So we'll talk more with Richard. Yeah. I wanted to say I had interviewed and actually had Todd Niemeyer in here. Yes. And, of course, he was the Farmer Todd from Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, and learned a lot, went around all the gardens and everything, and That was really, really interesting. So is he no longer involved, or how's that?
He was out in the garden and managing the our market days for UACC. And he would talk to the residents as they came up and picked up their food. And he'd hear about their non-food problems, housing issues, transportation issues. But as a farmer, there wasn't a whole lot he could do about those. He's now in a position where he can actually help address some of those other problems.
Right.
And so he seems to be very happy in his new work. I think he still misses the garden.
Yeah, I bet.
Todd's a farmer through and through. But yeah, he's doing good work over at the Office of Human Rights.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad to hear that. One of the things was, has the South Street, is that progressed? The South Street Garden.
The South Street Garden has progressed. I believe it was installed last year.
Right.
And so we did use it this year for some of our fall crop.
Oh, good, good.
We are reinforcing the fence around there. The city is doing some interesting work out there. There's some woods behind the garden, and they're installing a bridge. They've got some trails and so forth back there. So they're creating this really nice space for people to come to. One thing about South First Street, and this is true for the Friendship Court Garden as well, is that both of these gardens are slated for redevelopment.
Mm.
And so we are, you know, we've got another year at Friendship Court for certain, and South First Street at least another year, who knows, maybe more. But ultimately, these gardens are going to have to move. And so it goes back to that ownership issue that I was talking about earlier.
Okay.
But for the time being, we're going to, next year for 2019, we're going to produce a lot of food and
Excellent.
Feed a lot of people.
Excellent. So what I noticed, there was a project coming up with condos or something like that down in these areas, and something just got planned, and Todd was talking about when they were going to redevelop, or whatever they call it, especially in Garrett Square, that they were talking about putting up high-rises, which would house a lot more people on the same land, but it would take up the garden there, you know. And he was talking about rooftop gardens.
Yeah, rooftop gardens is something that I've discussed with some folks. Mm-hmm. It's a different type of gardening.
Oh yeah.
One of the things I've discovered about rooftop gardening is soil is heavy, and mm-hmm. wet soil is really heavy.
Oh so, yeah. All right. Of course.
So the soil material that's mm-hmm. used for rooftop gardening is more like the kind of potting soil that you. If you were to buy a plant at the store, it's got that very fluffy, lightweight kind of soil in it. So, and you know, there are a bunch of issues related to rooftop gardening, you know, getting things from the ground floor to the roof, and there's wind up on the roof. I mean, all of these issues, there are solutions to, because there are places where rooftop gardening is happening and is successful. And the thing I like about gardening is that it's not an either or. If you're creative, you can figure out a way to garden. And my hope is that as the redevelopment effort goes forward, that all of the people involved, including the residents who are most likely to be affected by whether or not we have a garden and affected by the redevelopment, that everybody has a voice at the table to come up with some creative solutions to ensure that we still have our urban gardens.
Right. Well, that would be so cool, you know, especially mm-hmm. if they do that. And then, of course, the residents, just like they do now, can get involved.
Right.
And it will, you know, bring all that fresh food to them, which would be so cool. And so what do you see for the future? Just getting better and better, it looks like. It seems like your guys are really steamrolling.
Well, yeah.
I mean, or I should say snowballing. Yeah. much better analogy. Right.
Yeah, you know, I'm new in this position, and so I had a bit of a learning curve out there in the garden this season. I came into the garden about halfway through the season, and there's a lot of stuff to learn. Every garden has its own personality. You know, the soil is going to be a little bit different from garden to garden, the slope of the land. There are all of these little details that you have to learn. But at the end of the day, if you don't have to be, it's not rocket science. You don't have to be an expert. And so it's almost anybody can be successful at it. And so I'm happy that we were able to produce some food this year, and we were able to feed some people. And I'm excited about next year, where we get to plan and start at the beginning of spring and get a lot of resident input. One of the things we want to do next year is host some social events. And so, because right now, or this year, every Wednesday was Volunteer Wednesday. And so I would have people from the community come out and volunteer. And that's great. And we're going to do that again next year. But I would also like to start having just, you know, some social days where mm-hmm. invite people out and just kind of have a meal out there in the garden and just socialize and just have a good time.
That could be tied in with a fundraiser, couldn't it?
It absolutely could. You know, one of the things I wanted to mention before I'm out of here mm-hmm. is yesterday I had a luncheon with five amazing women. Now, these are five women. They range in age from 71 to 81, mm-hmm. and they are UACC volunteers. And so they came out this year every Friday and helped with market days where we hand out the food. And they're all retired. In some cases, they have to come from a little greater distance, but they were rock solid. You know, whether it was raining or sunshine, they were always there. And they are in my opinion, the unsung heroes. I mean, they are true leaders in the community, and they're leading not just by words, but they're leading by action and leading by example. And I just wanted to give them a shout out and say, thank you, B. Thank you, Shirley. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Patricia. And thank you, all of you, because you made my transition into this job so much easier.
Yay. Wow, that's great. That's great. I hope they're listening. And also, you know, we have opportunity right here. To Your Health, notice where City Schoolyard Gardens is currently recruiting 2 organizational interns. Are they still doing that, or is this old?
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay, okay. No problem. All right. Well, let's see. So, yeah, go to their website, folks. It's just so cool. City Schoolyard Garden website, just doing some great things. Go ahead.
I'm not directly involved with the update of the website, but the gentleman who is always on the. I mean, he's always on the money. So my guess is that those positions are still open.
Oh, good, good, excellent. So if you're listening and you want to get on over there and get involved with this great, great program, go to the website and check it out for sure. And I was noticing on the stories and the blog, just some wonderful, wonderful people there. Who's this? Beatrice. Did you mention her? I think you did.
Beatrice was one of the volunteers. She's got a great story. I mean, she's been in Charlottesville, came out, I think, when she was 6 years old. Her family came from Delaware, and she grew up in the garden and has had a long and fruitful career and is now volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just inspiring, you know, what she's done
that
with her life,
so
and
cool.
What she's doing now. She's doing something that most people either can't do or don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, that's why I say they're leaders.
Really? And at the top of her page, it says, it's actually a quote from Maya Angelou, and it says, "I've learned that you shouldn't go through life with a catcher's mitt on both hands. You need to be able to throw something back." That is so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. And she's and then they have you'll be able to learn all about the various volunteers and also about the programs that are going out of there. Fresh vegetables in various communities. Have you ever thought about a food truck? Maybe even like an old school bus that was kind of converted to a kitchen, and then it can go into some of these neighborhoods, urban, you know, neighborhoods, and, you know, look like you're ready.
So what we do, let me explain what our market days are like.
Okay.
So
every
Friday through the growing season, we have market day. And market day actually circulates across 4 different locations in Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
So at the Friendship Court location, South First Street location, 6th Street, and Crescent Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And so by rotating through those 4 locations, we're able to access a lot of community that there. One of the things I would like to reinstitute for the coming season,
mm-hmm,
is doing sort of, I guess you could call it, deliveries. So at Crescent Hall, a lot of our residents there are elderly. Some of them may have mobility issues, and they may not be able to make it out to market day when we're at Friendship Court or when we're at South First Street. And so I know in the past there was a volunteer who stepped up to actually come to, say, the First Street, South First Street market,
yes,
day, pick up food, and then take it to the folks at Crescent,
mm-hmm,
Hall. I would love to see something like that reinstituted. I have thought about the having a vehicle of some sort,
mm-hmm,
that I could go around with. And so it's definitely something I'd consider, you know, thinking about working into the plan. You know, maybe we could do that on an opposite day, or maybe once or twice a month or something.
Yeah, I actually talked to Janet there at South First Street. Have you met her?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. She's a pistol.
Janet's she's a great volunteer. She's on the UACC. I think she's an advisor on the UACC,
mm-hmm,
board, and she's been extremely helpful when I'm doing door knocker campaigns, when I'm out at South First Street knocking on doors, handing out flyers. You know, Janet's always there.
Yeah, and folks, if you missed the interview with her, she won a $5,000 grant because of what she wrote about how they needed to have a garden there at South First Street. And so she won $5,000 to kind of get that kicked off. So, you know, way to go, Janet. I'll tell you, it's just people are just kind of coming out of the woodwork when they hear what's going on. And actually, just to tell you, there's our station co-founder and president here at WPVC. He has a friend that has a couple of acres that he wants to donate.
Oh, wow.
And so I'll put you, you know, in touch with him.
Great.
And you never know. And so, yeah, he wants to donate, to probably give a land use, maybe not, you know, give the land, but give the land use grant type of thing for it to, you know, put up hoop houses or whatever it is that, you know, you think would be the best.
That sounds awesome.
Best use of that land. I know, right? A couple more acres. Heck yeah. You know, so, that's what we do here on WPVC is, we talk with food professionals and industry, professionals as Richard is, and giving food security or helping food security right here for Charlottesville and just helping our neighbors. You know,
yes.
That's amazing. Well, I'm going to get into my rant and I call it my 2-minute drill. I think it might be apropos as to what we were talking about. But I say, you know, let's face it, our survival as a species depends on two basic needs being met. We need air to breathe and food to eat, you know, right? And but life, it goes without saying, if we breathe in dirty air, our lungs are going to suffer and our resources will be spent trying to heal them. However, if the air is still polluted, it's like trying to catch your shadow. The food we eat should also be clean and free from poison and carcinogens. If not, we get sick and fat and spend many dollars trying to get well. Unfortunately, clean air, clean water, and clean food is not a priority of the powers running our food and health systems. Yes, if you talk to the individuals face-to-face, they'll say clean air, water, and food is important, but then go back to work and it's business as usual, resulting in the opposite. So I needed to add clean soil to this list because clean food is not possible without it. And changing the natural food or our national food and health systems can happen, but it starts at home, folks, by changing one community at a time. So what we've been talking about. And we here in Charlottesville and the surrounding counties have the land, and with a concerted community effort can achieve food security. The combined City Schoolyard Gardens and UACC, Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, should be an example to us all that through education and hands-on experiences, eating habits can be changed to a more healthy diet, leading to less obesity, a healthier brain, and a general feeling of well-being. Less resources would be spent on health care, and because our children will be working beside others from different cultures and skin colors, over time, it will result in citizens who are not only healthier, but who tend to get along. I mean, can't we all just get along? I say, yes, we can. I want to thank Richard Morris from City Schoolyard Gardens, and my prayers and thoughts are going to my Aunt Elizabeth. Unfortunately, we couldn't hook up. There was no answer. But the activism is helping make the peers live healthier. And thanks for listening, folks. And remember, communities working together towards food security and social acceptance are keys to your health.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining in the downtown mall, and by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Ridge Shopping Center. Be listening again next Saturday morning at 11 for To Your Health.